All right, we're beginning here by the two dots on the bottom of Nun Zayin Amud Bet. The Gemara is going through the Mishnah one by one and explaining how do we know there's an Iser Hana'ah associated with each of the items that was mentioned in the Mishnah. So here the Gemara is discussing V'chulin shenishchatu be'azara minahanei mile. How do we know that chulin that were shechted in the azara, that they not only have an Iser Achila associated with them, they also have an Iser Hana'ah associated with them. Amar Rabbi Yochanan Mishnah Rabbi Meir Amra Torah Shchot li bisheli, bishelcha, bishelcha. The Torah gives us a command to shecht my stuff in my location, meaning that which is kodesh in the azara, which is my location, bishelcha, bishelcha, and your stuff, meaning basar chulin, to do it in your location outside of my mikdash, outside of the azara. Masheli bishelcha asur. When it comes to my stuff, if you take it outside of the azara, then you're chayav for shchutei chutz. So, av shelcha b'sheli, asur. So too, your stuff that you bring into my location is asur. Or in essence, each one has its location. If you violate that location, you bring the stuff, kodesh, out of the azara. We know the Torah says, shchutei chutz, your chayav. So too over here, if you take your chulin and bring it into the azara, it should be asur. Ima sheli b'shelcha nushkareit. Wait a minute, it's a much more severe punishment and issue to take the kodesh stuff outside the azara, where you have specific mechitot, and it's dedicated to Hashem, taking out, there is a chiyuv karet. Av shelcha b'sheli anush karet. Then you're going to extend that and say that when you bring chulin into the azara, which seems to be a much smaller infraction, there you're going to say there's anush karet, v'amarkra. Del petach umed lohi vio, lakriv kurban l'Hashem, v'nichrat. So the pasuk says by shchut echutz, pashat ha'achrei mot, that if you didn't bring it to the omoed, and you didn't bring it and put on a korban l'Hashem there, v'nichrat, then you get a punish karet. O korban anush karet, achulin shenishchatu ba'azara ein anush karet. The chiyuv karet is only for shchutei chutz, for things that are taken outside of the location they should be in, I mean the kodesh that should be in the azara, you take it out. But chulin that comes into the azara, that is not subject to a chiyuv karet. So ikar mifrach, so that we can break up. Ma l'sheli b'shelcha shekein anush karet. Based on that, then you can undermine this whole limud, which is to say that there is some sort of imbalance here, because the shchut echutz are subject to a penalty of karet. The chulin shenishchatu ba'azara is not subject to anush karet. So then you can't extrapolate anymore. Whatever din applies to shchut echutz doesn't necessarily have to apply to chulin shenishchatu ba'azara. That means that shchut echutz could be asur ba'ana, yet chulin shenishchatu ba'azara would not be asurim ba'ana. And that wouldn't be inconsistent, because shchut echutz are chayav karet, chulin shenishchatu ba'azara are not. And so you could not, therefore, define the halachot of chulin shenishchatu ba'azara al pi shchut echutz. El amar Abaye, mehocha. So Abaye says, rather, it comes out of the midrash halacha, which is mehocha. Ushichato, v'shachatoto, v'shachatoto, by the Korban Shlamim, that is found in Perek Gimel and Sefer Vayikra, when it's going through all the different possibilities of what you can bring as a Korban Shlamim, it uses the term Ushchato, Vishachatoto, Vishachato, which are all extraneous. Talata Kroe Yetere Ma'atamud Omar. What do I need these three extra psukim for? The Fisha Ne'amar, because it says in Sefer Dvarim, Kir Chakmim Chamakom Vizavachta, when you're too far away from the Mikdash or the Mishkan and you need to eat meat, then Zavachta, and that's where we get the Halacha of the Moshe of Sinai, about shchita, what you need to do, and how to shecht an animal. Bezavachto, just that's the only word that we have. From there, the Torah Shebaal Peh explains to us what are the requirements of shchita. Berichuk makom atazoveach, v'yatazoveach v'makom karov. So the limit from that is that only far away from the azara are you allowed to do this. But bekirov makom, when you're right there in the azara, that's not the case. Prat l'chulin shlo yishchatu b'azara. That teaches you that chulin cannot be brought in the azara. That would only be true with things that otherwise could have been brought in the Mikdash. So when you do it outside, when it's chulin, you got to do it far away, meaning outside the azara. If you do it in the azara, it would be a violation. How do I know that when you have a baal mum that couldn't have otherwise ended up on the mizbeach, you still have to shecht it outside the azara and not in the azara? Hakasher or min hamachshir, depending on the gear seer, but they're from the same category or species as animals that could be brought on the mizbeach. Minayin the rabot et chaya. How do I know to also include chayot and not just behemot? Meaning that chayot don't go on the mizbeach. There's no chaya that goes on the mizbeach in the mikdash yet. That is basar that you can eat, and basar chulin that you can eat. How do I know there, if you bring it into the Azaran Shech, that it's problematic? Because that's the same din as a behema that requires shechita. It's the same category. Neither are both at ofot. How do I know to include fowl as well? Gives you of those three limudim. Now, the nature of the braita is not so clear, because the braita brings you information. It says, well, I'm including it because of this, I'm including it because of this. And then in the end it says, Tamad Omar. And it brings three psukim. Why do you need three psukim for one limud? So seemingly what's happening here is that it's taking each one of those psukim and saying the limud that I made, that is out of each the extraneous pasuk that I had there. Rashi indicates here that the perusho chad chaya, chad ofot, v'chad isur achila. That the three shachatus that we use over here, one is to teach you chaya, one is to teach you ofot, chaya because there's no chaya that ends up in the mizbeach, ofot because they don't have shchita min haTorah, meaning that the Torah never says they need shchita, that is something that is not explicit in the Torah, but rather Allah called the Moshe Mitzinai. And even if you believe there is shchita dof min haTorah, nevertheless the dinim of shchita dof are different than the shchita of a beima. And therefore, maybe I would have thought they're not included. Again, the pasuk tells me yes. And then Rashi says the last one is the isra achila, which is that you can't eat any of these items, which we'll see in a second. Those are the three limudim from that pasuk, which indicates that when it comes to balei mumim, I don't need the pasuk that I would have been able to learn now. And according to Rashi, balei mumim is a real limud. The remainder of limudim are something that you would do bedochak, and that's why I need these psukim to reinforce that that limud or that logic makes sense. Tosafot and others bring an alternate, that the three that we're using here are Chad Bali Mumim, Chad Aichaya, and Chad Ofot, the three Limudim that we just had. The problem with that, and even with Rashi's spread a little bit, is what do I need the Psukim for if you already learned it out from a different logic? So Tosafot on the other hand says that if I didn't have the Pasuk, Bidochak, maybe I could have learned it this way. But what the Gemara is doing is bringing you what I call the hierarchy. What is the most likely thing that I would include? So the Gemara says, well, a behema baal mum is the closest to a tamim. Therefore, if I have a pasuk, the thing that I'm going to include in the Easter of Chulin Shnei Esrei Tu Be'Azara is a baal mum. Next, what is a chaya is the next closest thing. So that would be the next thing I include. Ofot, that's the furthest away, and therefore I'll include that last. So the nature of the braita is giving you the order in which I would include them. So I have three psukim, so I got to come up with three things that I would include. And here's the hierarchy of what I would have included. Baalei mumim, then chaya, and then ofot, because of the nature of their connection to the original behemat mima that would have been brought in the mizbeach. I just say this as a sidebar. There's a lot to say about it, but clear here that the primary way to eat meat is to eat it as a korban. And that is the way that one should do it. That's the way they did it in the midbar. Once they got to Eretz Yisrael, there's a practical problem, which is every time you need to eat meat, you can't get to the mizbeach in order to bring it. So there is a dispensation called richuk makom. We are allowed to have basar chulin outside of the mizbeach, or outside of the mishkan, or the mikdash. So that's a bidyavad situation. But for that reason, certain rules apply. For instance, you can't eat the chalev, you can't eat the dam, the items that would have otherwise ended up on the mizbeach, because that's really where it should have been. So when you do it outside, we're not going to let you take those, because they really belong to the mizbeach. In addition, you can see here that if you bring them in and shech them in the azara, there's a problem, because you're not doing what you should be doing at the behemah. The real way to do this is to put it on the mizbeach. You bring it into the mishkan, to the mikdash, and then you shecht it there, then you're doing the exact opposite of what you should have done. Here you have access to the azara, access to the mizbeach, and then you're shechting it as basar chulin. That would also explain why you would have a havamina, as to why tmimim would be problematic, and maybe not balimim, or maybe not chayon ofot, because they're not in that category of items that would have ended up on the mizbeach. So maybe there's no restriction. Again, all of that can be explained by this concept that the primary or the best way to eat basar is to bring it as a korban. Alright, so now the Gemara says, Yochol lo yishchot vim shachat yeh mutar. You would think that, don't do this. But if you do do it, the meat is mutar, meaning that there's an isur, but it doesn't change the status of the meat itself. Tamad Omar, ki yirchak mimcha makom, bezavachta vachalta. Says there that when you're distant, you can do shchita and you can eat it. Masha ta zoveach berichuk makom ata uchal. Whatever you shecht outside the Azara, that you can eat. So therefore, you can't eat that which is b'makom korov, that which is close by. Prat l'chulin shenishchatu b'azara. that comes to exclude of Zichulin Shenishchatu Bezerah, which do not qualify over here. According to Rashi, this is the last of what the Psukim is used for. Or way that Tosafot and others that learn that the three refer to the Bali Mumim, Chayan Ofot, then this is learned from the Tmimim. That the fact that you have this din by Tmimim, and now we saw that the din of other animals is the same, we'll extrapolate that din to the other items as well. Vein Yala Tmimim, Haruim Li Karev. That's only true by Tmimim that can go on Mizbeach. Minayin the Rabot Bali Mumim. How can I know to include Bali Mumim? Rabbe Ani Bali Mumim Shikain Mina Makshir Mina Kasher. Minayin the Rabot Etachaya, Mirabbe Ani Etachaya Shi Bishchita Ke Behema. Again, the same process that we went through in the Braita before. We include Bali Mumim because they are all the same species, the same animal that otherwise would have ended up on the Mizbeach as a Tamim. We include Chaya because a Chaya gets Shchita like a Behema. Minayin the Rabot Etofot Tamalu Marsh. Vishachato, Vishachato, Vishachato. So here you see that we have these three limud again. You would think, okay, you can't shecht it, but if you do shecht it, you can throw it to the dogs. So this is the Isra Hana'ah. I mean, that so far we have an Isra Achila that we've determined. How about the Isra Hana'ah? Talmud Omar, Lakelev, Tashlichun, Oto. So that Oto, Atamashlich, Lakelev, Viatamashlich, Chulin, Shinishchatu, Bazara. So that you can throw that to the dog, but you can't throw this to the dog. Now, as Rashi notes over here, that the pasuk over there is talking about basar basadeh b'treifa. What does that have to do with chulin shenishchatu b'lazara? So Rashi makes a claim here that that pasuk means basar basadeh b'treifa. The Gemara learns from that sadeh, b'galui b'kisadeh, that is open and out in the field, shein lo mechitza, that there is no mechitza there. Harehu k'treifa. That anything that doesn't have a mechitza is the same din as a treifa. And since it doesn't have a mechitza and it's a din of a treifa, then it's mutar ba'ana. What does that come to exclude our case over here? Case by chulin shenishchatu ba'azara, which does have a mechitza. Mechitza is the reverse of normal, which is that it must be done outside the azara, not in the azara. So since it has a mechitza, it's not subject to this rule of open policy. The open policy is that if I have a treifa, where there's no binding of the location in which it matters or you can do this, then there's a heter hana'ah. On the other hand, by chulin shenishchatu l'azara, where there is some sort of boundary, then there is an isur hana'ah. Others disagree with Rashi and say that the limud is just an asmachta from the pasuk that there's an isur hana'ah over here, but not as directly as Rashi does it. The reason they don't want that is because otherwise you have a source for chulin shenishchatu b'azara. The fact that chulin shenishchatu b'azara is a source, now you have a source from it from the pasuk v'kelev tashlichun oto. And the Gemara is searching for sources for chulin shenishchatu b'azara. Why doesn't it bring this? Other Rishonim claim that chulin shenishchatu b'azara is not obvious that there is a mechitza. And therefore you first have to establish that there is a mechitza, then the application of this pasuk is relevant. But without that, you would not have assumed that the kelev tashlichun oto excludes chulin shenishchatu b'azara. Yeah, Bazar Basadeh just says that there are mechitzot. So now the question is, does chulin shenishchatu b'azara have mechitzot? There's a possibility that you could say no. That chulin shenishchatu b'azara, you could check that anywhere. It's not asur. And then you would say then that the pasuk kelev tashlichun oto is not relevant to it. You first have to establish that chulin shenishchatu b'azara is problematic. Once you've established it's problematic, then it doesn't fit into this pasuk. And that's why it works as an isur hana'ah. So now, Ashkechinu Mar Yehuda, the Rav Yosef, or the Rav Shmuel, Breid Rabu Bar Chano. So Mar Yehuda found Rav Yosef and Rav Shmuel Breid Rabbi Bar Chana Davu Kaimei Apitcha de Bei Rabo. They were at the entrance way to the Beit Midrash of Rabo. Rav Yosef is a peer with Rabo. Mar Yehuda comes along and asks them a question. Amalu Tanyo Hamikadesh bePeter Chamor bBasar bChalav ubChulin shenishchatu baAzara bShimon Omer Mikudeshet vChamim Amim Eina Mikudeshet. So here I have a braita, a person who uses peter chamor, basar v'chalav, and chulin shenishchatu b'azara, all items that are mentioned in our Mishnah, that are asurim b'hana'ah. Then Rabbi Shimon Omer mikudeshet. Rabbi Shimon says they all work. Chamim amim, eina mikudeshet. The chamim say it doesn't work. Now, the chamim's position is easy to understand because these are isurei hana'ah. Isurei hana'ah you can't use to be mikadesh nisha. Question as to what Rabbi Shimon's position is. So Rashi already notes for us. That Omer Mikudeshet, bePeter Chamor Michayim. Peter Chamor is when it's still alive. And that is based on what we just saw in Rabbi Shimon's position in yesterday's daf, which is that Rabbi Shimon believes that the Isur of Peter Chamor only starts from the time of the Arifa. When you kill the Peter Chamor, that's when it becomes a Surbana. Prior to that point in time, there is no Isur Hana'a. And therefore, we're talking about here an animal that's alive, where the Chachamim disagree and say there is an Isur Hana'a. Whereas Rabbi Shimon says there's no Isur Hana'a, and that's why they have a difference of opinion here. By Basar V'Chalav, Basar V'Chalav is a machloket between Rabbi Shimon and Chachamim as to whether there's an Isur Hana'a by Basar V'Chalav. Chachamim believe that there is an Isur Hana'a, therefore you cannot utilize it. Rabbi Shimon in the Gemara in Chulin disagrees, as well as what we saw in yesterday's daf, says that it is mutar bana. Chulin shenishchatu be'azara. So now over here we have a machloket as to what the reason is that chulin shenishchatu be'azara are asurim. What Rashi says over here, kasavar isuro lav doraita. Lo isur shchitato, lo isur anato, lo darish richuk makom hachi elamid derabanan. Basically, what he is suggesting over here is that the whole institution of Cholin shenishchatu be'azara is only a din derabonon and not a din deoraita. And that's because if it was a din deoraita and it was a sur v'ana'a, then you would have a problem now, which is how could you be mekanei shenisha with it? So what Rashi says is it's not a sur v'ana'a mi deoraita. There's no such thing as cholin shenishchatu be'azara, basically mi deoraita. So then why did I restrict it? Because it says, dil ma'at de meimar kodshim nifsalu l'achar shchitahein. So what people are going to think is you bring it into the Azara, you shecht it there, and then it never ends up on the Mizbeach. So what people looking from the outside are going to say is, this was Kodashim, that had a psul in it, and then they couldn't use it. Then they go ahead and eat it afterwards, or they have hana from it afterwards. Why? Because there's no Isra hana by Chulin Shenishchatu be'Azara. So people are going to come to the wrong conclusion now, which is that they see an animal in the Azara that was deemed unworthy. They don't know that it was chulin. They just think there's some psul in it. Then they're going to walk outside and eat it. So what people are going to think is that if something that was kodashim and had a psul in it, would be mutar ba'ana'a, which is not the case. People are going to come and get anah from kodashim that their dam didn't end up on the mizbeach, for whatever reason. If it's pasul, whatever reason, the dam didn't end up, they're going to come to the wrong conclusion. So therefore we say chulin shenishchatu be'azara are problematic, but that's all an institution, the Rabbana, nothing to do with an Adoraita. And that's what he says here. Alma chulin shenishchatu be'azara Rabbi Shimon lav doraita. So there you see from this that chulin shenishchatu be'azara according to Rabbi Shimon is clearly not a Torah restriction. And that psukim idashim before, just an esmachta, it's all a din derabbanan, it's not a din doraita. Now, this raises huge issues because what is the story with regards to Isurei derabbanan? If something's also midrabanan, can you be mekadesh and isha with it? The Gemara in Pesachim is pretty explicit that you cannot. And that is the Gemara in Pesachim of Dav Zayin says that if you have an isur chametz midrabanan, which makes the chametz now asur bana midrabanan, you cannot be mekadesh and isha with that. Kur denaita dechita, that's what the Gemara says in Pesachim. And that is an isur derabanan, an isur hana, and the Gemara itself says that the nafkamina is you can't be mekadesh and isha with it. So how is the Gemara here concluding that it's an Isur Derabanan and Rabbi Shimon never says Mikadesh it? How can you be Mikadesh? Even if it's an Isur Derabanan, be'ana'ah, it makes it worthless. If it's worthless, you can't be Mikadesh and Isha with it. So Tosfot raises the question, and Tosfot answers, Ve'yesh lomar da'otam ika miha sha'ot de'oraita. That by Chametz, there's a machloket over there between Rashi and the Tosafot as to what the Isur Derabanan is over there, the Chita Gedukur Denaita. Whether it's that the chametz is the rabbanan, that chitu gudanaita are not really chametz min haTorah, or are we dealing with sha'ot the rabbanan? The chametz is chametz the raita, just happens to be it's only hours of the rabbanan. But in either instance, what Tosafot points out over here is that you have an aspect of do raita associated here. Or in essence, there's an isur the rabbanan that derives out of a do raita. And that's a chiluk that you can make in any isur the rabbanan. Is an isur the rabbanan just a do raita plus? Or is the Isur Derabanan a new institution? Here by Chulin Shenishchatu be'Azara, it's a new institution. It's there to prevent the problem with the Din Doraita, but it is in itself, there is no Chulin Shenishchatu be'Azara according to the Torah. That's all a fiction created by the Rabbanan in order to protect against Doraita. On the other hand, by Chametz, Chametz is a problem Doraita. There are certain circumstances where it won't be. So over here, you've expanded the reach of the Isur Doraita through the Din Derabanan. And over there, either according to, if you think that it's chametz doraita and sha'ot derabanan, you're still dealing with chametz which has a doraita basis, you're just extending the period where it's asur. Or if you say that it's Shaot Doraita, it's hours Doraita, but the Chametz itself is only the Rabbanon. In either case, you have an aspect of a Doraita there, and the Rabbanon are just expanding the Doraita. And that's how Tosafot is Bechalik between the case in Pesachim versus our case over here. Tosafot also notes that according to the Maskan of the Gemara, that Rashi says over here that even Rabbi Shimon agrees in a Mikudeshet, then it won't be a problem at all, because that would be consistent with the Gemara in Pesachim in the end. Other Rishonim, and I noted this as well, make a distinction between Chametz and other Isurim. Chametz is subject to a Chiyuv Karet. Chametz is one of the most Chamor Isurim in the Torah. So therefore, maybe the Isur Chametz Midrabanan, which derives from an Isur Karet, Deoraita, that you cannot use Midrabanan in order to marry. Over here, we're doing Chulin Shenishkatu B'Lazara, which is a lav according to Chachamim, but for Rabbi Shimon, it's all a Din Derabonon. It's not associated with the Chiyuv Karet. Maybe over there, that Din Derabonon can be utilized, or that Isur Anah is not problematic. That may, again, may derive from the difference between Isurim Deoraita and Isurim Derabanan. This is a Chiluk that's brought up in numerous places, that Isurim Deoraita are on the Chetzo, and Isur Deoraita is on the object itself. When you deal with Basar Chazir, you deal with a Nevelo, the object itself is Asur. Well, then, when you deal with an Isur Derabanan, the object itself is not Asur, it's you as an individual cannot, the Chachamim tell you, eat this. So even though it's kosher midoraita, the Chachamim prevent you from doing this. That means that it's an Isur Gavra. So an Isur Gavra means that I have an object here which inherently is worth something. It's just that the Chachamim prevented you to get access to it. So that might explain why there may be a difference between Doraita and Derabanan, and maybe by an Isur Derabanan you could do it. Now, that would depend on what the test is for getting married. And is the test that I could sell the object? Well, over here, you can't sell the object, so the Chachamim prevented you from getting Hana'ah, so maybe it can't work. Or, is the test here, does it have an inherent value? Here it does have inherent value, it's just that you're prevented from accessing that inherent value. Right, all of those would help to explain maybe some of the difference between Chametz and the case of Chulin Shenishkatu Azara, or reason to differentiate between a Doraita and a Derabanan. So now, the Gemara says, Beraminu. So then, we challenge this statement that Rabbi Shimon believes that Chulin Shenishkatu Bazara are Derabanan. Rabbi Shimon Omer, Chulin Shenishkatu Bazara Yisrifu. They have to be burnt. Ben Chaya Shenishkata Bazara, and so too a Chaya that is Shechted in the Azara, they both have to be burnt. Here Machloket, Rashi and Tosafot. What is the focus over here? Rashi says that it's the fact that it was Nisrifu. The fact that you burn it, that is a significant type of disposal of such Isurei Hanai, Yedei Sreifa, is indicative of the fact that it must be Doraita, because otherwise you would not demand such a high level disposition. It's a significant way to rid oneself of a Isurei Hanai. If you wanted to do that, you could just say bury it. You could say rip it up, get rid of it. The fact that you have to burn it, that is the highest form of removal of Isur Hana'ah. So it's so significant that you would only apply that to a Din Doraita. And the fact that the Bright over here is suggesting that Rabbi Shimon believes that tells you that he thinks that this is an Isur Doraita. Then the Tosafot suggests that the Limud is from the fact that a Chaya is included. Because as far as a Behemah is concerned, I understand why you would make a Gzeirah, even if it was a Din Derabonon and say Sreifah. Because the Behemah, as we said before, could get mixed up with the Korbanot there, and you'd make a mistake. But Chaya, which is only Otu Behemah, then if you're going to make a Gzeirah about Behemah, to make a Gzeirah like Gzeirah doesn't make sense. So Tosafot says the fact that you prove this Doraita is that the Chaya requires Sreifa. Because if it was only a Din Derabanan, then you would say Gzeirah Otu, which is what Rabbi Shimon was saying before we're suggesting, that because it's in the Azara, it's going to look problematic, and you're going to come to do this with Kodoshim. That's only applicable with animals that would be kodoshim. That's a behemah. So fine, that's one thing to say there's an Isur Derabanan and it requires sreifa because you get mixed up with kodoshim, but that's by a behemah. To include a chaya after that, that's like a double extension of the gzeirah. You're doing chaya atu behemah, behemah atu kodoshim. It's too far away, so you wouldn't do it. The fact that it says chaya misreifa, that's why we know it's doraita, because otherwise it wouldn't make sense. Now, if behemah is doraita, then you could say midrabanan chaya atu behemah misreifa. And that would make sense. So that either way, either because it's Sreifa, or because of the Chaya Atu Be'ema, for one of those two reasons, Rashi and Tosafot say that we're dealing with a Din Doraita over here, which seems to contradict Rabbi Shimon's previous position. Atu Lekamei Derabba, they were right outside the Beit Midrash of Rabba, they go into the Beit Midrash to ask him about this. Amalo Palga Uk Minichi. So he says, as Rashi notes over here, he calls him a Kantaran, Ragil Achlok Al Chaveirav. This Mar Yehuda is quarrelsome. a guy who squabbles and tries to undermine the Limudei Chachamim. And once again over here, he's asking questions just to give you a hard time rather than to really learn. This is just a quarrelsome, difficult individual who's trying to create problems and being makshe, but there is a solution, there is a resolution to this stira. Said up here that the case is a case where it was shechted and found to be a treifa. Meaning that, up front, it was already a treifa. Rabbi Shimon Tamei, and Rabbi Shimon's Lashitato, the Tanya, Shochetet the treifa, someone who shechs the treifa, v'chene shochet v'nimtzei treifa. So shochetet the treifa where it's obvious that it's a treifa from the outside and you shecht it. Or if you shecht, and then afterwards you investigate it, it is a treifa, ze v'ze chulin shebazara. Both of those are problematic. The chulin shebazara, even though they're psulim as korbanot, nevertheless, when you shecht them and you shecht them in the azara, they have a status of chulin shebazara to bazara. V'shimon matir ba'ana, v'chamim osrim. Rabbi Shimon says, no problem, mutar ba'ana, v'chamim osrim. This is Rabbi Shimon the Shitato in other places, as Rashi notes, which is, shchita she'ina ruya lechila, lo shmei shchita. That any shchita that cannot result in an achila is not a proper shchita. And since it's not a proper shchita, there is no chulin shenishchatu ba'azara now. What Rabbi Shimon says is that, v'yisra ba yedei shchita ino achal alea. Anytime you have a shchita, which would not deem it a shchita to make it kasher, meaning that if you shechted this animal outside the azara, it would not be kasher. It's not a good shchita. Then when you do it inside the azara, you're not subject to the penalties of chulin shenishchatu ba'azara, because the shchita itself is not a shchita. Then having violated shchita chulin ba'azara, because you didn't do a shchita. You didn't do a shchita that makes a difference. Meaning that if you'd done it outside, it wouldn't have been a kosher animal anyway, so the shchita makes no difference. So that's what Rabbi Shimon is the shitato, that any shchita that would not be ruya also does not accomplish the isur, but that would come a yidei shchita. So then, first of all, according to this, that's what Tosfos noted before, Rabbi Shimon agrees that chulin shenishchatu ba'azara is asur, and even if he believes that it's asur midrabanan, or isur d'oraita, then you could not get married with it. Here it's a case where the animal was found to be a treifa. Since it was found to be a treifa, now you're dealing in a different category. According to him, that's not a shchita. That's not an isur of chulin shenishchatu ba'azara. That's why it's mutar to be mekadesh nisha with it, because it's really not chulin shenishchatu ba'azara, because of the fact that it wasn't a shchita ha-re'uya. So based on that, now the Gemara answers all these questions. First of all, what was it meant that Rabbi Shimon believes that chulin shenishchatu ba'azara is d'oraita? He does. He believes it's d'oraita. Well, if it's d'oraita, then how is it possible that he allows a woman to be married with chulin shenishchatu ba'azara? That's quite the case. If the case is that it's real chulin shenishchatu ba'azara, you know, Hanani, you couldn't get married with it. But here is a case where he shechted it as a treifa, shechted it and found it was a treifa, which according to Rabbi Shimon, the shechita is not good enough to make it asur. It's not good enough to make it asur. It's not chulin shenishchatu ba'azara, and that's why it's mutar ba'ana'a. If mutar ba'ana'a, then you can marry the woman with that chulin shenishchatu ba'azara. Machran, v'kideish v'dmeyem mikudeshet. So this is the last part of the Mishnah, which is if you sell them and then you marry a woman with it, mikudeshet, then it works. Minolon. How do you know that's the case? How do you know that when you sell Yisrei Hana'a, the money is not affected by the sale of the Yisrei Hana'a? The Goli Rachmana b'avodat kochavim, by Avodah Zarah it says, v'ayita cherem kamohu, koshata mihayehemenu, harehu kamohu. The Gemara learns from the word of hayita that anything that you generate from it has the same din as it. Michlau, the Yisrei Shvetaro sharu. To tell you that any other Yisrei in the Torah would not have this impact. That means that by Avodah Zarah, if you sell the Avodah Zarah, whatever you exchanged the Avodah Zarah now takes on that Isur Hana'a of the Avodah Zarah. That means, kol she mehayehemenu, anything that you generate from it. If you give the Avodah Zarah to someone and in exchange for that, they give you something else, that's something else you created or generated from the Avodah Zarah. Therefore, it's going to be Usur Be'ana'a. That they learn out by Ita. But the implications of saying that this is true by Avodah Zarah means that by anywhere else, that would not be the case. B'nei lef mina. Mar says, wait a minute. Anytime we have something in the Torah that's mentioned, it becomes a paradigm. It's not an exclusionary term. Because Avodah Zarah and Avodat Kochavim are two psukim that teach you the same din. And since they teach you the same din, it's two are the exception to the rule, not the rule anymore. That's what we say all the time. If two psukim teach you the same thing, then it's already telling you these are the exception to the rule. This is not the rule. Because if you want it to be the rule, mention one, and we would extrapolate it from that one. And when you have two psukim saying the same thing, they do not teach, they are the exception. Avodat kochavim adamran, what is the rabbi already explained? Shvi'it mahi. What is shvi'it? Yovel hi, kodesh tiyalachem. Again, we saw this before. It's yovel hi, kodesh tiyalachem. It will be kodesh for you. Ma kodesh tofes et demav. Av shvi'it tofes et demav. Just like kodesh. When you exchange the kodesh onto money, that money takes on the kedusha of the animal. So too by shvi'it. Even though, again, we mentioned this before, it's speaking about yovel. As far as we're concerned, yovel and shvi'it have the same dinim unless specified otherwise. And therefore, it applies to shvi'it as well. So Mar says, "Ima kodesh tofes et damav yotzei dechulin." By kodesh, when you exchange the money from the behemah to the money, the behemah goes out to chulin, and the money becomes kadosh. So af shvi'it tofes et damav yotzei dechulin. So too by peirot shvi'it, if you exchange them onto money, you sell peirot shvi'it. The kedusha should move on to the money, and the peirot shvi'it should be free and clear to eat. But that's not the case. We know that that's not the halacha by shvi'it. Tamalomar tiyeh. That's what it says there. Kodesh tiyeh lechem. Baviatata, hey, it remains in its status. Therefore, Ketzat, what's the outcome of this? Lakach bepeirot shvi'it, basar. You take peirot shvi'it and you barter them for meat. Elu ve'elu midvarim bishvi'it. They both have the kedusha of shvi'it, the peirot shvi'it, the peirot themselves, and the basar as well, which means that when you come to the shata biur, when you have to eliminate shvi'it from the house, you'd have to do it both for the basar and for the peirot. But basar, tagim, you barter that meat for fish. Yatza basar v'nichnasu dagim. Then the meat is free and clear now, and the fish have the kedushat shvi'it. B'dagim yayin, you barter those fish for wine. Yatzu dagim v'nichnas yayin. Then the dagim go free and clear, and the yayin becomes kadosh v'kedushat shvi'it. B'yayin shemen, then you barter the wine for oil. Yatza yayin v'nichnas shemen. Then the wine is free and clear, and the shemen takes on kedushat shvi'it. Haketzad, what does that mean? Acharon, acharon nitpas. The last item has kedushat shvi'it, b'shvi'it, uperi atzmo asur. And the peirot are asurim. So as far as shvi'it is concerned, the peirot shvi'it always remain with kedushat shvi'it. Whatever you bought with them takes on that character of kedushat shvi'it. And then that item, if it's exchanged, will pass on the shvi'it to the next item, but that goes free and clear. So in the end, the two items that will have kedushat shvi'it are the peirot themselves always, and the ending. So the starting and ending objects will always have kedushat shvi'it. So that is true by shvi'it. That is not true by avodah zarah. By avodah zarah, every item that is exchanged along the way takes on a kedushah here, or the negative properties of avodah zarah along the way. Although, how far down the line this isur hana goes in terms of avodah zarah being tofes the item is actually a machloket in the Gemara itself in avodah zarah as to whether it applies to chilufehem or even ad olam. So for that reason, Tosafot already raises a serious issue with this, which is, we only say shnei ketuvim b'ayim kechadim lamdim if you could have learned one from the other. I mean, that the two psukim tell you something you would otherwise know one from the other, and therefore they are telling you I'm an exception to the rule, not the rule. But if you couldn't have learned one from the other, that means that each pasuk is necessary. If each one's necessary, you can't claim that that's the exception to the rule. He says over here, I have a problem, because there's some sort of imbalance between shvi'it and avodah zarah. You couldn't have learned one from the other. There are other Rishonim who suggest that you could learn one from the other, and that the nature of their difference really derives from the language that's used in each one of them, how you get to this Haviyatah Tiyeh. By Yovel Hi, Kodesh Tiyeh Lachem, that's the word that is used, whereas by the Avodah Zarah it says Vahaita. So the Vahaita is something that it will create, it will be, meaning that everything that touches it will be this way. Tiyeh Lachem is more along the lines that the Kedushah remains with the Peirot Shvi'it. Not about the item that remains kadosh along the way. That just keeps getting exchanged along. The tiyeh is referring to the original peirot shvi'it. So the possibility of that difference might be learned out of the way that the verb is expressed. That might be the difference, and therefore maybe you could learn one from the other. And just the verb itself tells you the different nature of that kedushah. Others suggest that the Gemara is about to give another answer here, and that other answer would cover us. Enoch Hanami, you could have asked this problem, but we have a different answer anyway for the other daya. And for that other day, once we have that answer, it would answer our question here as well, which is Anicha Lamanda Marim Melamdim. That works well for the one who says Shnei Ketuvim Abayim Kachareim Melamdim. Elamanda Mar Melamdim, according to one who says you do learn out of two psukim. Ma'ika the Meimar. What can you say? Miute Ktive. There are miutim in each pasuk. Ktiv Ocha Ki Cherim Hu. Hu means only Avodah Zarah has this, nothing else. Uktiv Hatam Yovel He. He in So since they have miutim, this is the only time it applies. We can't extrapolate. Maybe you would have thought we could extrapolate from them. The answer is that there's a miut in each one of these cases. So it's only applicable here and nowhere else. So irrespective of the fact that there are shnei ketuvim, doesn't matter. We don't need the shnei ketuvim. Each one of them has a miut to say, I am like this and no one else is like this. So I can't extrapolate, can't make it into a paradigm. That would answer our question as well about shnei ketuvim and bayim keechad, which is, even in the end, if you ask the question how we can't learn one from the other, in the end, the miutim prevent you from learning from them, and that could be the answer here as well. Right, next Mishnah. Ha-mekadesh b'trumot u'ba'asrot u'ba'matanot u'ba'mei chatat u'ba'efer. Question here, whether it's chatat or efer para, seems from the Gemara and from Rashi, the Begir says efer chatat. From the Mishnayot and parts of the Braitot in the Gemara, it seems that it's efer para. Ha-zo mekudeshet va'afilu Yisrael. It works for Kiddushin, and even if he's a Yisrael. So clearly here the problem is in the Mishnah, that you're using items that a Yisrael cannot utilize or cannot eat. Trumot belong to the Kohen, Masrot belong to the Levi, Matanot are the Matanot Kiuna. So all of these are items that the Yisrael has no ownership in, and yet, when he's utilizing them to marry the woman, then works. Why? They have no monetary value to him because they belong to another party, he has to give them to another party. What you would conclude a bit pashtut is that our Mishnah is saying that there is such a concept as tovat hana'ah. Tovat hana'ah is a principle that's brought up in the Gemara in many places, is where you have no ownership in this object itself. It's not yours. But you have a controlling ability over the object, which is you can determine who gets the object. Is there monetary value to the fact that you can determine who the recipient is? So for instance, by truma, you can decide to give the truma to this coin or to that coin. That controlling ability, is that worth something? Does that have monetary value? And that's what's called tovat hana'ah. It's machloket in the Gemara. So whether that controlling ability has monetary value. Now, the nature of that is because someone would pay you for that. That's how you would determine it if it has value. The truth is the coin can't pay you for that because then that's like a coin of Messiah Begranot. But a third party could pay you. For instance, the Kohen's father-in-law could pay you to give it to this Kohen because he's not a direct recipient or beneficiary of it, and he could pay you for that. So therefore, if I could monetize that controlling ability or interest, then maybe that is enough to make it into consideration that I can marry with. So seemingly from this Mishnah, the point is that that is the case, and that's why you can get married. But then the first line in the Gemara is, Amrula, Tovatana, Inamamon. He says that this ability to determine who's the recipient is not a monetizable right. And therefore, you can't use it for anything. Eitvei Rabbi Abba. So what's the first thing Rabbi Abba asks him? Our Mishnah, Lula. Eitvei Rabbi Abba, Lula. Hamakadesh b'chumot masrot matanot. B'mei chatat b'efer para. Arizo mikudeshet. Fafilu Yisrael. So here you see that Israel can use it even though he has no rights to it. Again, we're dealing with chumot, masrot, matanot are the Zro L'chaim and Kebah, which come off the animal that are given to the Kohen. All these items, the Yisrael is not Shayach in them, and yet he's allowed to use them. Over here, we're talking about a Yisrael who inherited Tevel from his maternal grandfather's house. And his maternal grandfather was a Kohen. So his maternal grandfather passed away when there was Tevel in his house. V'kasavar matanot shelo hurmu k'misha hurmu damyan. And even though there was yet to have anything separated from the Tevel, it's as if it was separated. Why is that important? Because a Kohen has to separate out Shuma from his Tevel. Even though he can keep the Shuma from himself and he can eat it himself, the item or the object is still Tevel until you remove the Shuma from it. So even a Kohen has to separate out the Shuma. Once he's separated, it's his, but he has to separate it. So here, where he has a grandfather that was a Kohen and he has Tevel in the house, had he separated out the Shuma, then the Shuma would clearly have belonged to that grandfather. And when it's passed to the grandson, who's not a Kohen, he could sell it for the value of Shuma. He could sell it. It's his. Because his grandfather had ownership over it, and he inherited that ownership, no problem. The question is, when it's Tevel, when it's still not Mufrash, the Shuma, does the Kohen have enough of a right in that Shuma that it's already his? Because if it's not his, then the object is Tevel, and the grandson, when he separates out the Shuma, that's the first appearance of the Shuma, he'll have to give it to the Kohen like any other Shuma that he would separate out. On the other hand, if you invoke this principle that the Gemara has mentioned here, which is that when you have Matanot Shlo Hurmu, gifts that have yet to be taken off, tithes that have to yet to be taken off of this item, we deem them or we view them as if separated. So instead of viewing the Tevel as one big mix, view the Tevel as being Truma, Maser, Chulin. Now, you have to deal with that and separate them out, but they are really a big amalgamation of these separate items. But since it's distinct enough or separate enough, that means that this grandfather, the Kohen, owned the Truma at that point in time. Since he owned the Truma, when you inherit it, then you can utilize it. So that's the Chiddush over here, which is that Matanot Shlohumu, Kamisha Urmu Damyan, and you can inherit it. The truth is that Gemara could have answered that he inherited Truma from his grandfather. He would have done the same thing. It doesn't have to be Tevel. We'll see. As Rashi notes over here, V'u Adin Nami, Damatsu Lukma, B'Truma Shnafalomi, Beit Avi Aymu HaKohen. He could have set it up as Truma that came from his grandfather's house. Ela Akashule. But if he does that, Im Kain, my Kamash Mal Matit and Pshita the Mikudeshet, then what's the Chiddush of the Mishnah? It's obvious if his grandfather owned the Truma and passed it to him that he can utilize it to marry the woman. It's his to use. So we have to come up with a Chiddush in the Mishnah. The only Chiddush in the Mishnah would be if it was Tevel and it was his grandfather's and then he still gets the ownership of the Truma. That's a Chiddush. Then the Mishnah is telling you something and that's why he set it up as Tevel and not Truma. The fact that Ula takes this position with regards to our Mishnah is very interesting only because we have a memra from Rava in the Gemara in Nedarim that says Tovat Ana Mamon. And Rava who's a Batra, we would pass him like Rava, and that's the Locha, the Tovat Ana is Mamon. So then, based on that, what is our Gemara doing over here? But there are Rishonim who believe, therefore, that the Locha is not like our Gemara. And Eino Hanami, the Mishnah, you can be Mefaresh Kipshuto, that is talking about Tovat Ana is Mamon. Like we said when we read the Mishnah, that's the easiest way to understand the Mishnah. And this is just dealing with those opinions that don't hold that, but that doesn't mean the Locha is like it. Whereas there are others that say that the Locha is like Rava, and Tovat Ana is Mamon. Nevertheless, in this case, it's an exception to the rule because it's Kiddushin. And Kiddushin might have a different standard, as we mentioned before, which is not only do you have to have consideration in order to marry her, you have to have ownership. And the lack of ownership over here in the item is problematic in terms of marrying. So even though Tovat Ana is Mamon in other instances, nevertheless, in this case, it's an exception to the rule because Kiddushin demand a higher level of ownership or control in order for you to get married. And the Tosfot Rei HaZaken actually addresses this issue head on and says, "Vafagav Damar Rava Beperek Batra Din Nedarim Lagabei Mudar Tovat Ana Mamon Lo Polig Adula." They're not arguing. "Dehatam Ayri Bimudar Tafilu Vitur Asurbo." So over there, you're dealing with Mudar Hana'a. And when you're talking about Mudar Hana'a, there we suggest in the Gemara Nidareem that not only is any monetary transaction precluded, but any type of giving up or forgiveness is also problematic there. Kilu avitur hi mamon gamur. As if forgiving or relinquishing on the ownership of something is enough to be considered money. Ula ma'iri davar shetzarich mamon. Whereas Ula is dealing with something that needs real money. Over there, Tovat Ana is not enough to be considered to be Mamon. So the difference being that over there, there's a much higher threshold of what is considered to be Hana'a when you're Mudar Ana from someone, and therefore even Vitur, even Tovat Ana is considered to be Mamon over there. But over here, where you need real money and real consideration to marry, over here we'd say Tovat Ana ain't a Mamon. And the Tosfot Rei HaZaken just concludes with something that is obvious. Which is that if it's a Kohen who's using the Truma, then for sure he gets married. All of this is only true within the Yisrael using it to generate the Kiddushin. But if a Kohen is using the Truma for Kiddushin, he certainly has sufficient ownership and monetary rights here to marry with that Truma. And that works because even though she may not be a Kohen, she can sell him to another Kohen, and those monetary rights are sufficient consideration to generate the Kiddushin. So now, by mine, Rabbi Chiya bar Avin mi Rav Huna. So Rabbi Chiya bar Avin asked the Rav Huna, Tovat Ana, Mamon o Eina Mamon? Question, is this ability to control who the recipient of an object is that monetizable? Does that have real monetary value? Now, Malay Tinitua, it's our Mishnah. HaMekadesh b'trumot u'masrot u'matanot v'mechatat v'efer para arizo u'mekudeshet. V'afilu Yisrael. Our Mishnah seemingly indicates that Tovat Ana is Mamon because you can get married with it. So Rav Chiya bar Avin says back to Rav Huna, when Rav Huna gives him the answer that our Mishnah is the obvious answer, didn't we already establish that this Mishnah can be explained as a case where he got from his maternal grandfather a Kohen? He inherited Tevel, and we look at it as if it's separated already, and he has the Truma belongs to him. And that's what the Mishnah is speaking about, and therefore you can't prove anything about Tovat Ana. The answer is that he owns the truma here, and that's why he's able to do it. It has to do with the fact that it's tovat hana'ah. He has a right to give the truma to whom he wants. Amalei, he said back to him, hotzat. So Rashi brings two interpretations of what that means. Either hotzat is motzei et shma zu, whoever said this memra over was not a real Talmud Chacham. Hotzat is that in essence you're corrupting the real meaning of the Mishnah with your qualification of the Mishnah. That's one way to say it. Katil kani ba'agma'at. Lashon hutza. Hutza means like a reed. You should go out and cut reeds in the field because that's what you're good for. You're not good as a Talmud Chacham. That's what he thinks. Ichsif, he was embarrassed about it. Husavar mishnaitata kamarle. Because he thought he was saying this out of the shmatata. I'm like, hachi kamina. No, 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 this is what I mean. When I say hotzat, I'm not telling you that you are an outsider, you're not a Talmud Chacham, or that you should go cut the reeds in the field. What I'm telling you is hotzat, that you match up with the man of hutzal, which is Rav Asi the hutzal, Kai Kavatech. Rav Asi of hutzal explains the Mishnah like you do, and therefore when he explains it like you do, it's not a proof. And so Rav Huna is saying, you were right. Your explanation here and your qualification in the Mishnah is similar to the way that Rav Asi the Hutzal learned the Mishnah. And he's saying he was giving him corroboration to that view. But Rav Huna suggests our Mishnah is a proof. And Rav Chir Ba'avin's response then makes it that it's not a proof. And he says that your statement is a good statement because we have others who say just like you. All right, so Mar says, Nema Kitanae, let us suggest that this issue of Atanat Mamon, whether Tovat Hana'ah is Mamon or not, is a Machloket Tanaim. A Gonev Tivlo Shel Chavero, someone who steals Tevel from his friend. Mishalem Lo Dmei Tivlo Shel Chavero Dmei Rabbi. Rabbi says you got to pay him back all the Tevel you stole. Rosi Rabbi Yudo Omer, Enu Mishalem Elo Dmei Chulin Shebo. He only owes him the Chulin that is in it. Meaning that this Ganav who stole it, he stole Tevel. Tevel is made up of Chulin, Maser, Truma. So as far as the Baal HaBayit is concerned, the only thing that really belongs to him is the Chulin. So the Ganav has to pay him back the Chulin. Now as far as the Truma and the Maser, the Baal HaBayit is not the claimant for that. It's the Kohen who's the claimant for that. It's the Levi who's the claimant for that. And as Rashi notes over here, it's a class claim. And when you have a class claim, you what's called Mamon She'en Lo Tovim. Because if you have the ability to collect on something, you can go make the claim, then it's yours. On the other hand, when a Kohen comes to someone and says, you owe Truma, give me the Truma, the guy can say, maybe I do owe Truma, but I'm not giving it to you, I'm giving it to the other Kohen. And then the other Kohen shows up, because I'm not giving it to you, I'll give it to the other Kohen. The problem is that you're not a claimant here, because it's a class that has a claim on the Truma, it's not the individual who has the claim on the Truma. So basically for the Ganav, he'll have to pay the Chulin, because there the Baal HaBayit has a real claim. But as far as the other items are concerned, he doesn't have to pay them back because there's no real claimant over here. Now, whether that means that when you have no claimant, there's no obligation to pay, that's one possibility. Or do we say when there's no claimant, he doesn't pay because nobody can force him to pay. But Mi'ikar Din, he really should pay for it. He really should take care of the stuff that was stolen. So now we have a machloket as to whether you have to pay back the whole tevel or the chulin. My love, hakam iflige. This is their machloket. My zavar tovat hana'ah mamon. My zavar tovat hana'ah eino mamon. So what we'll say is that Rabbi believes that your ability to give it away gives you, that controlling interest means you have a monetary right there. That monetary right is why he has to pay you back. Not only the chulin, but the maser, the truma, and everything. According to Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, you don't have a tovat hana'ah here. That tovat hana'ah is not worth money. You may be able to give it away, but that's not monetizable. If that's the case, then he only has to pay you back the chulin. Now, based on that, there is a machloket here in the Rishonim as to what you have to pay back. Because if you say that it's Tovat Hana'ah, what does Tovat Hana'ah do now? Does that mean now the Truma and Maaser that he pays you back has full value? And when he pays you back, he has to pay back the Chulin plus the whole Truma and the whole Maaser, and then you can determine who it goes to? Or does he just have to pay you the Tovat Hana'ah? Which means, yeah, he pays you the Chulin, the full amount. And for the Truma and the Maaser, he has to pay you not the full value, but the value that you would have had in controlling who is the recipient of that item. So that's a machloket in the Rishonim as to how to read that. But either way, what you see here is that seemingly there's a machloket here as to whether Tovat Hana'ah does have monetary value or does not have monetary value. It says, no. Tukuliyama Tovat Hana'ah ain't a mamon. Everybody agrees that Tovat Hana'ah has no value. And over here, we're talking about a case where he got Tevel from his maternal grandfather that was a Kohen, And they're arguing about whether when you have tevel, do we view it as if it's removed already or not as if it's removed? Rabbi believes it's as if it was taken off already. Since it's as if it was taken off already, you own the truma over here. And since you own the truma over here, then when the ganav steals the tevel, he's stealing not only the chulin from it, but the truma part of it, which is yours, because your grandfather was a kohen, and he gave it to you. And he gave you this tevel, and it was as if the truma was already separated, so you own the truma, you own the chulin, the ganav's got to pay for it. What about the maser? So Rashi claims over here, af maser rishon the kohenim, and the kansinu ezra the levim. So he brings up a gemara in other places, which is that Ezra was kones the levim, who did not come back at the time of Shivat Zion, when they left Bavel and came back to Eretz Yisrael. And that part of that penalty was he gave all the matnot of the Levim to the Kohanim. Whether that means he knocked the Levim out totally and gave it to the Kohanim, or whether that means that the Kohen also has a right to collect it. But in either way, since his grandfather was a Kohen, he had a right to the Maser, and he had a right to the Truma. You still have problems with things like Maser Sheni or Maser Ani, which would not be the case. But nevertheless, he has real monetary ownership over here. And that is why Rabbi believes the Ganav has got to pay for it. He's got to pay kefal on that because he stole things that you had real monetary interest in. Not just Tovata. Now, you owned it because it came from your grandfather. On the other hand, Demar Savar, Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yudah says, Elav Kamish Umar Damien. It's a tevel. Tevel is tevel. It's not as if the Truma and the Maser are taken off. Therefore, when the Ganav steals it from you, when you inherited it from your grandfather, you own the chulin, you don't own anything else. The truma, the maser, all of that is going to be given away to the kohanim and levim, and therefore you have no rights here. And that'll be their machloket about this topic. Some say the kuliyam mishum nu damyan. Everybody agrees it's as if they were separated. The tovatana ain't a mamon. And tovatana does not result in a monetary right. They're arguing in the din of Shmuel, damar Shmuel. Chita achat puteret et akri. When it comes to giving away truma, all you have to give is a minimal amount, and then you're done with the truma. Everything you give in excess of that, that's a nice bonus, that's a benefit that you're giving the truma. The Torah gives you that right to do it, but as far as you're concerned, the smallest amount would be sufficient. So Mar Idle the Shmuel, Rabbi holds like Shmuel that one little item would be sufficient for truma. Well, if that's the case, then even you as Israel now, when you have items that are here that are tevel, and you took off truma from it, the only amount that you have to give to the kohen is that one little kernel. Everything else is yours. So therefore, when the ganav steals it, he stole stuff that belongs to you. Now, in the end, if you want to give more truma, that's fine. But when he stole it, those are really yours. And therefore, he is chayav for the whole amount, according to Rabbi. On the other hand, Rabbi Yosef Yehuda says that Shmuel's din is not true, and truma is truma. You have to give the 2% or the 1/40th or the 1/60th, but that giving one little thing is not going to get you out of it, and therefore the ganav is not chayav to you for it because it's not yours. It's not yours because we don't think that tovatana is mamon. So therefore, according to Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda, you have no monetary interest over here. Now, as Rashi points out over here, v'chi polig Rabbi alei Rabbi Yosef Rabbi Yehuda b'truma l'chuda polig. Obviously, Shmuel's din is only applicable by truma, and therefore their machlok could only be about truma, not about the maser. Because by maser, this din doesn't apply. If this din doesn't apply, then it wouldn't explain their machloket. So it's interesting that Rashi, in the previous case, went out of his way to show you that it's applicable both to truma and maser. And he says, it's the kohen, so everything can go to the kohen, the truma and the maser. Over here, he makes it clear that you can't say that, and that the machlok would only be about truma. And the truth is, you could have said that about the previous case as well, without Rashi's addition, which is that the previous case, which is the machlok is about truma, not about the maser. In the end, Rashi says the first case, or the case before, was a machloket about truma and maser, because the kohen has a right to both of them. Over here, we argue in Shmuel, where Shmuel's din is only relevant by truma, then obviously their machloket is only in truma, and not in maser. Now, obviously, the case here by Shmuel also does not require that you got this from your maternal grandfather who was a kohen, because this is relevant even if it's your own stuff. It's also relevant because when you are mafrish the truma, how much truma you're mafrish is relevant. So even if it's yours, your tevel, and you're going to go take off truma, how much is deemed to be truma here is important. And that's what the Gemara is saying, that if you hold like Shmuel, then one kernel is truma, the rest is all chulin, and that's why the ganav's chayav to you. On the other hand, if you don't hold like Shmuel, then the truma is truma, and you can't demand payment or repayment of it because you don't own it. And since tovatana is ein ha-mamon, you have no monetary right over here. As Rashi notes over here, You could, if explained this case, not only where it's your own truma, as Rashi says, but you could have also explained it in a case where it's truma that came from your maternal grandfather. And we'll say everybody agrees that it's as if nothing was taken off from the tevel, and there is no tovat anah, and they're arguing within Shmuel's din. So why didn't the Gemara do this? If you do that, then you have nobody who is the author of our Mishnah. Our Mishnah, at least according to the way the Gemara is learning it, is talking about a case where you got the tevel from your maternal grandfather. The only way that works is if you look at it as Kemisha Hormudamian, as if they were separated out. And that's why the Gemara over here, when it says they're arguing within the din of Shmuel, says that the case is Tukuliyama Kemisha Hormudamian, Betovatana Eina Mamon. Everybody agrees it's as if it was taken off, and it's Tovat Eina Mamon. The reason they do that is because otherwise, then we have no author to our Mishnah, because our Mishnah requires someone who thinks that Tevel is as if separated already, that the items are broken out already, and that's how we would explain our Mishnah. If you take up the case as Rashi notes, you could have said their machloket is about a case where everybody agrees that they're not taken off, and everybody agrees they're tovat anah eina mamon, and it's a case where it came from your grandfather. And they're arguing in Shmuel's din as to how much truma you need. But Rashi says if you do that, then you end up making Rabbi and Rabbi Yossi Yehuda both holding that matanot or shaloka umudanyan. That when you have tevel, it's as if they're not separated. And then who's the author of our Mishnah? Not Rabbi, not Rabbi Yossi, but Rabbi Yehuda. And so that's why the Gemara went out of its way to explain the case here as being a case of in your tevel and not inherited tevel. And to say that everybody agrees that it's as if it was separated. Any item that is as if separated makes no difference in our case here, but it makes a difference in giving us an author for our Mishnah. So our Mishnah requires someone to say Kemisha Hormudamian, and that's why the Gemara went in this direction and not in the other direction. Some say that everybody agrees that we don't hold like Shmuel. And this is the reason behind Rabbi's position is because they penalize the Ganav. In essence, what we're saying now is that all of these items are not true. We say Tobatana in a mamon. The right to control who it goes to doesn't have monetary value. Number two is, if you don't hold of Shmuel, when you take off Shuma, you gotta take off the full amount. One little thing's not gonna help you over here. Likely that has to do with the fact that it has to be a nitina. When you give it to the Kohen, it has to be a davar that is significant enough to be a nitina. A little thing is not enough to be considered a nitina. So Shmuel's din is wrong. All of those things we disagree with. Well, if that's the case, then Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda is right. Because Rabbi Yehuda is right that the ganav should only have to pay back the chulin and nothing else, because you don't own, or you have no monetary right in anything else. The answer is you're right. Everybody holds like Rabbi Yossi Rabbi Yehuda, but Rabbi came and instituted a knas, a fine on the ganav that he should not be marviach. Over here, when he steals the whole amount and he utilizes it, he benefits from the fact that some of it was truma maser because there's no claimant. And since there's no claimant, he doesn't have to pay it back. So Rabbi says, no way, how could it be chote niskar? I'm going to penalize him and say that he's got to pay that back. Since we're penalizing him, that's why he's got to pay it back, not meikar adin. So you're not learning anything about the dinim, you're just simply saying, I'm going to penalize the ganav for what he did wrong. And some say that everybody holds like Shmuel. The reason to do that is because Allah is like Shmuel. And therefore both Rabbi and Rabbi Yossi Yehuda, we're going to explain that they hold like Shmuel. If that's the case, then Rabbi is right. If we hold like Shmuel, then truma really belongs to you. Only one little kernel is what's truma, the rest belongs to you. The ganav should have to repay everything. So therefore, Rabbi's right that you have to repay everything. Then what's the reason for Rabbi Yossi Yehuda? The kansinu rabban on the balabai to lo ibaile le shuiye tu tivle. That it's a penalty on the balabait for leaving tevel around. The fact that he had tevel around, we're going to penalize him that he's not going to get paid back for the whole amount, because he shouldn't be leaving it around. He should get take care of the tevel immediately and separate out the trumot and masrot. The fact that he tarried in doing it, we're going to penalize him, he's only going to get paid back for the chulin part of it, not the truma part of it. All right, it's none. Our Mishnah, mikadesh b'trumot u'masrot u'matanot u'mechatat b'efer paraizo mikudeshet v'afu pi Israel. Even if you're in Israel. Veraminu, is that really true? And hotel schar ladun dinav betelim. Person who gets paid to adjudicate, then whatever he adjudicates is batel. Meaning that they're worthless. His dinim are worthless. It's not here where he's getting bribed. He's simply taking money for what he's doing. Someone who comes to testify and gets paid to testify, then his edut is nullified. Again, not bribery. He simply wants to be paid for coming. then he also is a dut, is worthless. The hazotu l'kadesh. If he does it to sprinkle the waters and ashes of the parah duma to an individual, or to make kadesh, then put the ashes into the water to make it into efer chatat, meimav me me'ara. The waters that he has here are me'ara. Rashi claims over here, me'ara, maim sruchim, putrid water. Now technically those are good for a mikveh, but they're no good for the parah duma. Tosafot said over here, Rashi didn't have to go so far to say that they're putrid waters. Even if they're not putrid waters, Meimara just means Ashborin, still waters. Still water is kosher the mikveh, it's not kosher for the parah duma. Parah duma, you need Maim Chayim, you need a live spring. So that's what it means, Meimara. Vefro Efer Makleh. And his ashes are like burning any wood, any ashes that you take. They have no significance over here. We, in all these cases, basically penalize him and ruin whatever he has done because he took money from it. Now, the reason for that is the principle that we've seen in other places in the Darim in Ketubot, which is Moshe Rabbeinu says, Rei lamadati etchem kasher tzivani. I taught you all these laws like God taught to me. And there the Gemara dashes that, mani bechinam, afatem bechinam. Just like Moshe did it for free and didn't charge anything, so too you have to do it without any charge for doing this. So when you charge for adjudicating and you charge for doing all the things that you're supposed to do in a Torah, then we nullify that what you did. We say that it was improper. Now the truth is that because you took money in itself should not disqualify them. Because the person is not trying to do this in order to sway his opinion. Nevertheless, he violated an Isur D'Oraita. And the penalty for violating this Isur D'Oraita is that we take away whatever you've done. We've nullified or ruined everything that you have done, despite the fact that technically it was fine. But nevertheless, because you violated this Isur D'Oraita, get paid for it, we're not going to let you do it. So now the problem is, okay, if you cannot get paid to do this, then in our Mishnah, when it says that he got married through the Mechatat and the Efer Parah, what exactly was he getting married with? These are not items you can charge for. If you can't charge for it, then there's no monetary value to these items. If they don't have monetary value, what is he getting married with? So that's the question. I'm Rabbi Lokasha. Kan b'schar hava'a u'miloi, kan b'schar haza'a b'kiddush. Depends what he's charging for. If he's charging for the hava'a, the bringing of the items here, u'b'miloi, or the filling or the drawing of the water, that's fine. Kan b'schar haza'a b'kiddush. On the other hand, if you're taking money for doing the sprinkling on the individual, or for putting the ashes into the water over there, that is not yours to charge for, and there is where we penalize you and say it doesn't work. So in the process of doing the azah of the parah duma to be mitair someone who is tamei, you need to provide two things. You need maim chayim, you need live spring water. You need the efer chatat, you need the ashes of the parah duma. Then you need to be mekadesh them. You need to put the ashes into the water in order to make them the waters that you need in order to sprinkle on the individual. And then you have to do the azah itself, the sprinkling on the individual. So over here, the Mishnah is talking about two of those issues, and the Bright is talking about the other two of these issues. The Mishnah is talking about the case of bringing the water, or the Maim Chayim, and the Mechatat, whereas the Bright is speaking about the Kiddush, the consecration, putting the ashes into the water, and the hazah, and the sprinkling on the individual themselves. Dekanami, you can mean dayek from the Lashon here, that that's the case. Diktani. Hocha b'mechatat u'be'efer para. Our mission is talking about a case of mechatat and efer para, meaning that that's why you can charge, because it's talking about bringing the ashes or filling the water that you can charge for, and that's why you can get married with it. Or Ktani Otam, and the Braita that we just quoted says, Bazot Ulekadesh, that he's doing the actions of Azaah Kiddush, there it does not work, or that's where we penalize him, Shmamina, that there's a difference between the filling of the water, the bringing of the ashes, versus the doing of the mitzvah itself. As Rashi notes over here, that, the Milta the Tirchahi, that when you're dealing with things that are an undertaking which require effort on your part, and to you to extend yourself, then Rachmana lo Ram Yalei, the Torah never demands that you do this. Bishari the Mishkal Agra, and therefore you can get paid for it. Torah doesn't say you have to go draw the Maim Chayim to bring here in order to do the Mechatat. All it says is that if someone has Mechatat, you have to do it for them or take care of them like you're supposed to. But the Torah never makes a demand on you that you provide all the raw materials and you do everything, all the work leading up to it. Therefore you can charge for it. Umikudesh, that's why you're Kadosh. But on the other hand, when you're talking about the Azah, the Kiddush, which are small items, the leka tircha, there's no real effort that you have to expend over here in order to do this. The schar limud mitzvah hu notel. And the reason that you're getting paid over here is because you know how to do this. You learned the Torah to do this, or you're teaching them or doing the mitzvah for them. And that's a violation of remei lamadati etchem, that you have to do things for free. And that's why it doesn't work. That's one way Rashi makes a distinction like that. If you look in the Tosfot Ri HaZaken, he brings Rashi's interpretation that the difference here is whether you're charging for the tircha or you're charging for the doing of the mitzvah. But then he brings an alternate view is, v'ika demanda amar, tatam ein ze ikar mitzvah, that you're allowed to charge for something that is not the primary mitzvah, but only a secondary aspect of the mitzvah. So you can't charge for the primary aspect, which is doing the haza'ah or the kiddush mechadat. Those are the primary mitzvot that you're doing over here that you can't charge for. The secondary and tertiary items that surround it, drawing the live spring water, bringing the mechadat and being mekadesh, that you could charge for because that's a hekster mitzvah in a sense. Preparing the mitzvah, there you could charge for it because it is not the key component of the mitzvah. It's only aspects that lead you to do the ability or facilitate your ability to do the mitzvah that you could charge for. So that's another way to view the difference over here about what you're allowed to charge for. In the end, and the Tosfos Ri HaZaken quotes the Rambam, it says that based on that, Vayikar, Shekitsha b'mechatat shayulo. The Rambam says over here that, unlike what Rashi explained, and the way we've been explaining the Gemara until now, which is that the mechatat means that he prepared the mechatat. Or the Efer Para is that he prepared the Efer Para, meaning that he brought the ashes here. Or he drew the water. Or he put the ashes into the water. That's what we're describing. The Rambam says that mechatat means that he took the ashes and says, here are the ashes, I want you to marry me with these ashes. So Rashi says you're trying to marry her with the effort for bringing the ashes to here and the wages that you would garner for doing this for someone else. You say, listen, I'm not going to charge you for this, but we're going to get married with that consideration because I could charge someone else for bringing it here. I won't charge you, but then you're going to take that consideration and marry me with that consideration. But Rambam on the other hand says, no, he's not doing it with the wages, he's doing it with the mechatat itself. He says, you're here, take this mechatat, I want to marry you with it. He says, if he's allowed to charge for bringing the water, if he's allowed to charge for bringing the ashes, certainly he can sell him. He doesn't have to give it to her for free. And since he could charge someone else for this, therefore when he gives it to her, then he can bury her with that consideration. The Rambam sees consideration for marriage here being the actual object itself. He hands her mechatat. He hands her efer para. And says, marry with this. And then we say, oh, you know how that, we know that's worth money? Since you could charge someone for bringing it to him, it means that you could sell it. Because if you could charge the wages for bringing it, then it has value because you could charge them the equivalent of what it would cost you to bring here, and you could sell this item. If you could sell this item, then you could marry with this item. But anyway, Rashi's learning is that we're not talking about the object. He's not marrying with the mechatat. He's not marrying with efer chatat. He's marrying with the wages he would have been entitled to had he done this for someone else. Since he doesn't charge her for the wages, those wages are what the consideration are for the marriage. That's the difference between the Rashi and the Rambam. Again, depending on what the girsa is, might favor one or the other. If you say it's efer para, it seems to favor the Rambam's shita, which is that efer para literally means the ashes of the para. On the other hand, if you say it's the efer chatat, like the other girsa that we have in the Mishnah, then that seems to favor Rashi, which is that it's the bringing of the efer chatat. It's not the efer para itself, it's the efer chatat that you're facilitating or bringing it here, and that would favor Rashi's interpretation. With that, we finish the second parak. And now we're going to start with the Mishnah over here. Omer lechavero, tzei v'kadesh li'isha plonit. Says to somebody, go out and marry me such and such a woman. Valach, and he went ahead, v'kidsha l'atzmo. And instead of marrying him on behalf of the principal who sent him, the agent himself marries the woman. Meaning that he failed his fiduciary duty to his principal, and the agent himself married this woman instead of doing it for, on behalf of the party that sent it. Mikudesh l'sheni, she's married to the shliach. He asked her to marry her. She says yes, they are married. Now, as Tosfot raises the issue over here, what's the chiddush? Of course she's married to the shliach. Why would you have a hava mina to say that she's married to the shliach? So Tosfot claims over here that he disclosed up front that he was a shliach, he was an agent for the other party. And after disclosing that information, he says, Hariyat mikudesh li. So the fact that he uses the word li implies that it's talking about himself. But maybe you would have thought that the woman thinks when he says Ariadne Kudeshet li, speaking on behalf of the principal, and that she's thinking maybe she got married to the principal. He says, the mouth of Tame Adam are Lilith Sorech Mishalcho. When he says Li, it's for the principal. Kamar Kamash Mulandalo, that it's not the case. So in the end, the woman knows that he is marrying her, but nevertheless, we'd have thought maybe because he uses a language after he disclosed the information that he's an agent, maybe he's quoting his principal rather than working on behalf of himself. The answer is no. Then when he says Ariad Mekadesh Ali, he's speaking on behalf of himself, and that's why we believe him. But the Rosh does note about this, Avalim Tashaliach, Vamar Mekadesh Ali, Einkan Beit Michush, Tehekdesh B'Tol, Lobby Ekdesh, that if the Shliach said Ariad Mekadesh Ali by accident, and he really intended to do his fiduciary duty and marry her on behalf of the other individual, then we don't say that she's married to the Shliach because it was a mistake. And Kedushay Taot Einam Kedushin. If it's a mistake in the Kedushin, it doesn't work. And therefore, there isn't even a chashash that she's married to this Shaliach. Others suggest it is that his breaching of the fiduciary duty to his principal is why we say it's a Chiddush over here. Maybe we would say that Sherit Yisrael Lo Yisu Avla, that Bnei Yisrael are not allowed to act improperly or dishonestly. And over here, where he breaches his fiduciary duty to the principal, he's doing something wrong. And maybe the Chachamim were kones that his marriage doesn't go through. Or they're kones that the marriage works for the first party. So that's the Chiddush of the Mishnah, that we don't do that. And she's married to the Shliach. Or the other possibility of what the Chiddush is here is that he didn't disclose the information. And then the woman, after the fact, finds out that he was a Shliach for this other party. She goes, had I known he was a Shliach, I would have married the other guy, not him. Nevertheless, she's still married to the Shliach because she accepted whatever was given to her at that time. And similarly, a person who says to a woman, I will have a deferred kiddushin with you, which means that in 30 days from now, the money I give you now will go effective and we will be married. And another guy comes in the interim and marries her. She's married to the second guy. Since the first individual created a deferred kiddushin, his kiddushin are not effective until 30 days later. If someone else jumps the gun and marries her in the interim, she's married to that party. Bat Yisrael, the Kohen, tochal b'tshuma. And therefore, Bat Yisrael, if she's marrying a Kohen here, meaning that the second guy is a Kohen, she's entitled to eat Shuma because this is a full-fledged marriage. It's hard to understand what the Chiddush is in this statement of the Mishnah, and maybe even what we discussed before, the first half of the Mishnah. The Ramban suggests that the first part of the Mishnah is just a setup for the second half of the Mishnah. I mean that everything in the first half of the Mishnah is Pshita, but the Gemara is bringing that as backgrounds because the cases in the second half of the Mishnah are not as Pshita, or they give us dinim that seemingly are opposite of what we said in the first half of the Mishnah. Others suggest that, again, the Chiddush here is that there's no Knas Midrabanan, and she's fully entitled to eat Truma. Me'achshav ul'achar shloshim yom. On the other hand, the officer to Kiddushin and says we're married from now and after 30 days. And someone else comes in, asks for a hand in marriage in the interim 30 days. Mikudeshet ve'eno mikudeshet. She is safek mikudeshet to both parties. So therefore, she wants to marry a third party. She needs a get from both of these individuals. She wants to marry one of them, then the other one has to give her a get before she can marry that individual. Bat Yisrael or Kohen or Bat Kohen Yisrael. In this scenario, if it's a Bat Yisrael who's marrying a Kohen, which would entitle her to Truma, or a Bat Kohen who's marrying Yisrael, where she's entitled to Truma in her father's house, but once she marries Yisrael, she's no longer entitled to Truma. Lo tochal b'truma. She may not eat Truma because there's a Safek Kedushin over here. And since there's a Safek Kedushin, she does not have entitlement to the Truma. And that's in the Chumrah on both sides. That if she's a Bat Kohen, we no longer let her take Truma from her father's house. And if she is a Bat Yisrael, she will not garner the status of being married to this Kohen, to the effectiveness of allowing her to eat the truma. Mar says, "Amelo chaviro tevi kedesh liisha tana mashasa soy l'shnagbo minagrimaut." So you have a bright that suggests over here that what he's done is done, meaning that he's married to the woman, the shliach, even though he violated his fiduciary duty. L'shnagbo minagrimaut. What he did was trickery and treachery, and it's not proper what he did. Betana didan. So why does our Mishnah say something like that? That's what he means. The Gemara says, halach nami diktani halach biramot. So when it says halach v'kidsha latzmo, means that he went in a deceiving and underhanded manner and did this, and therefore he is also indicating that what he did was improper over here. Okay, I'm going to stop here on the last line of Nunchet Amud Bet.